back, everyone, to Your Ball Was Out podcast presented by Phil from Tweener Head Tennis. We go behind the scenes of tennis to give you guys exclusive access and knowledge to what is going on behind the scenes in the tennis world. Today, we have a very special guest. Today, we have our very own Challenger Tennis Tour insider, Damian, who loves Challenger Tennis as well as we do, and goes into who we can expect to be the next up in the men's tennis world. Now, we are very excited to have Damian on to talk all things Challenger Tennis, but before you guys enjoy this chat with Damian, make sure you are following the podcast, make sure you are subscribed to the YouTube channel, and make sure to leave a 5-star review for this podcast on any podcast platform. And now, without further ado, enjoy our chat and Challenger Tennis Tour updates with our very own insider, Damian. Ladies and gentlemen, the last time Damian was here, I was in a winter setting and I was outside in a puffy jacket, headphones, and a beanie. Today we are here in my windows are open and it's 75 and gorgeous. So Damian, welcome back to the channel.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember that. I don't remember where I was, but that was unusual. I don't think I ever recorded anything with someone who was just sitting outside and was snow everywhere. This time, obviously, we're both in our apartments. But yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while, and it's no nature to worry about. No seeing if a bird's going to land on me or not. So we're back. Damien's back to talk about Challenger Tennis. Last time we spoke, we actually had a couple, I would say, good predictions. I think the last time we spoke, I remember we talked about Luca Nardi. I think that was a really good shout. We talked about Draper, and 2 years later, we just kind of nailed it on the head, really. So,
well, I suppose you probably checked that. I had no idea what we were talking about, but sure, that makes sense. I mean, Draper especially. Mm-hmm. Nardi, I guess, yeah, I mean, he broke the top 100. He'd be struggling now,
but still overall still doing pretty well compared to most. I think to start with is for you, Damian, has there been anyone, let's just start with the ones that have stood out so far. Who's been catching your eye on the Challenger Tour? And when we talk about this, I want to preface it for the audience that's either watching or listening. We talk about the men's Challenger Tour. We sprinkle in a few women, but the men's Challenger Tour, to be more specific when we are talking about this. So who has been standing out to you recently or since the beginning of the year that's kind of caught your eye on the Challenger level?
Yeah, I think we don't actually need to specify since like there's no women's Challenger Tour,
yes,
right?
That's very, that's very true.
I mean, people sometimes call the WTA 125s challengers, but never mind. Anyway, that's not the point. I guess if we're thinking about this year, I mean, there are maybe like two or three names that definitely come to mind instantly. One of them, Emilio Nava. I mean, yeah. Gotta be, right? One of the biggest stories. And obviously, there's a high chance that as well, he's going to like secure his Roland Garros wildcard thanks to all these mm-hmm. efforts. Maybe not, because Ethan Quinn is coming pretty close to him, actually. And Emilio is not playing next week. But either way, Emilio winning 3 challengers in a row. Also, the set streak that he had, right?
Yeah,
35.
That's true.
We were waiting for that, to see Emilio struggle to a point where he was like, I don't know, 250 in the rankings again. Mm-hmm. That was pretty brutal, because that's clearly not, you know, what his talent is, mm-hmm. is for, let's say.
Yeah.
And to finally have him right now at this sort of position, you know, not yet top 100, but like, let's say,
he's
on the way
close.
If he keeps it up. Yeah, it's fantastic to see. And I do think he's also shown a lot of like growth in how he's like even approaching matches tactically. And obviously, if you go on a run like this, almost the record in terms of the sets, that has to be like the first name that comes to mind, I think.
It really does spark your, I think, people's attention when it comes to Emilio Nava, because we talked about him being a part of that young kind of core group of American juniors that everyone saw the talent, everyone saw his ability to kind of make that push. And we've had him on the channel to talk about his mentality of being a dog and being like getting gritty, getting the ability to push through obstacles with a tough mindset. But what he was able to accomplish, it was 3 challenger titles straight, an unbelievable precedent for sets won. And then he recently lost in the, I want to say, semifinals
Final.
of final of Tallahassee, correct? Yeah. So it doesn't matter if it was if he won or lost, like making four straight Challenger finals, regardless, he has a pretty big jump in the rankings compared to Ethan Quinn in the wild card race for Roland Garros. But Ethan Quinn, as we speak, is one set up in the main draw for against, I believe it's Lajovic.
Yes.
And
And if he
they're.
won that, he would be just 19 points behind Nava. And
Yeah.
the next win after that, so if Quinn would beat both Lajovic and Mencik, would be putting him 1 point ahead of Nava. So Emilio, by losing to Schwarzer yesterday, has actually
Yeah.
put himself in a pretty difficult spot,
And
which
it.
I wasn't really expecting. Like, it seemed like
No.
this is just clear, just done and dusted.
Yeah.
But no, actually, it seems like even that one win in obviously Savannah could have been the difference maker. And now he's going to be a little worried about Eaton.
I think it's funny when we talk about this wild card race, right? This happens in every, I believe, almost every federation when it comes to Grand Slams. And when we ask players about whether or not they're following these races, I mean, it makes a really big difference for their careers. Like Quinn, just making and winning out and qualifying in Madrid is already a confidence booster. Emilio, confidence building no matter what with the challengers. But I mean, it's really another factor to add to players that really don't necessarily understand, or people that don't understand how much one smaller race affects their bigger goal, right?
Yeah, I think especially the ones for the reciprocal wild cards, so the American ones for the Australian Open and for the French, they tend to get a lot of publicity, and I really started like following them, just doing like my own Excel spreadsheets
I
and stuff
love
like
that.
that. I've gotten into that
I would
so
love
much.
to see. I would honestly, Damien, if you allowed me to see that, I would love to see that spreadsheet.
I post like excerpts of it sometimes,
Okay.
but yeah, for this one I have like 50 o over 50 players I think have competed over the last 4 weeks at this level. So like it has to be an M25 or above, and it has to be on
Okay.
clay courts. So
Okay,
basically, I have
gotcha.
everybody who lost as well. That's why the list is so long.
Gotcha.
But obviously, by the time we reach the 5th week, it's only gonna be like one or two players really in contention. But
Which
yeah,
is
I really
fair.
got into that, which for some people might be a bit weird since I'm not American. But it's basically so nice to follow that. And yeah, the stakes are massive. I think at least in terms of the American races, the players are definitely following it. They are definitely aware of what's happening and sort of what the reward is at the end of it, because obviously the payday is just insane compared to what you can earn in like a singular Challenger Tour event.
Oh, yeah.
So for people, I don't know, like recently Patrick Kipson or Nicolas Moreno d'Alboran, who won these races, I think that was
Yeah.
absolutely insane. Maybe less so for guys like, I don't know, Shelton and Mikkelsen, who actually even got into the top 100 and didn't
Yeah.
use that. It like went to the second person on the list. But
Yeah.
yeah, right now I'm pretty sure that both Nava and Quinn are definitely aware of what's happening. Maybe Ethan before this week wasn't paying too much attention to it because he was on 50 points, Emilio was on 119, so it didn't seem real, but he's definitely gonna know that he's coming close if he beats Lajovic today.
That's true. And I do agree with that. And in terms of other Americans that have stood out, Nishez, Bacivarretti, Lerner Tien, they kind of surpassed already the point of maybe 125 challengers, but it seems like those Americans have already surpassed going above the challengers. Am I assumed to correct?
Lerner, yes, but I mean Nishez, he's still behind the top 100. He actually was also, well, let's say for a while we thought that maybe he might be a factor in the race too, but he
Yeah.
hasn't earned a point. He's just been really struggling on clay. I mean, not that Lerner has been doing like amazing on clay. It's just that
But
he's
definitely.
already obviously inside the top 100. Yeah. So
Yeah.
I think for Nishez, yeah, the fact that he hasn't been too healthy recently, Miami had to pull out, and like, yeah, the fact that he isn't winning on clay, it's putting him in a bit of a difficult position because soon, obviously, there's going to be that time of the year when he actually starts dropping points.
Yeah.
Last year, of course, he was still in college up until June. Lerner, kind of similar situation, but he wasn't in college, but he was injured. I think it was his rib. So they both had this like large chunk of the season where they're not defending anything. And Nishash is struggling a bit. Like, I don't think the difference between their games, their current level, is like that massive, but definitely the results of late, I mean, they are favoring Lerner significantly.
I agree. And there's another name that I wanted to point out in Italian. We always like, it's not just for me, it's just the way it's been happening. We like to talk about Italians on the channel and the podcast because, let's face it, Italy has been one of the more dominant nations right now in terms of young talent. And Federico Cina, or Cina, however it is pronounced, I personally have
I
not
think it's
heard.
Cina, but
Is
I'm
it
no
Cina?
Italian.
It's
I think
okay.
it's Cina, but
We're
I'm
gonna go
not
with
an
Cina. It
Italian
sounds better.
expert yet.
Federico Cina just beat Coleman Wong in Madrid this morning, 7-6, 6-1. That's a name, 18 years old, that people have been really, I wouldn't say pushing, but people have been really saying a lot lately. And I don't know if that's just because of the management that he's under or if that's because of the Italian background, but people have been saying a lot of great things about this kid. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, I think it's actually funny that you mentioned Nardi earlier because to me it's a pretty similar like state of his game where he's at right
Okay.
now. The disappointing thing I guess for Luka up until now in his career was that he kind of stopped developing his weight of shot at some point, and like on the main tour it's not scary. And I think that's kind of what Federico also has to avoid. But there's a lot of that similar, I don't know, like a natural shot making talent. Let's say smooth attacking game, very good inside out, inside in forehand, obviously. And yeah, I mean, of course, he's been helped by these wild cards, you know, IMG, Miami, Madrid, yes. But to get
It
these
does. It does
wins,
help. It does help.
it does help a ton. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and say it doesn't. But at the same time, he obviously already made the Challenger final this year. He won an ITF, the very first event that he played this season. Seems like to me, like I don't know, he should be entering the Challenger Tour pretty regularly soon and just start playing here. I mean, he's just turned 18. I actually think there might be an even better Italian coming up who's 17 right now. Recent Challenger wildcards for Jacopo Fassami have been absolutely incredible. He is, yeah, it's gonna be the same Berrettini as Cina, but just hasn't had his 18th yet. I think he might be even better, but I've only seen him in like, you know, clay challengers. And when you look at his game, it's like very lefty, serve plus one forehand reliant. So I kind of wonder what he's gonna do if we throw him in like even quicker conditions. Like yesterday against Pellegrino, he lost, but he hits like 16 aces on clay. So I want to see that, you know, on a different court.
You said Jacopo Vasami?
Yes, exactly.
Ooh.
My
What the?
hot take is that he's going to be better than Cina, but of course it's so early
Really?
that these predictions are, you know, they have to be taken with a grain of salt.
But that's what's crazy is that we're comparing a 17-year-old to a recently turned 18-year-old about potential. Like, how do we, in tennis, it just goes by that quickly that we really have to go, okay, we have the next up, right? We have Sinner, now the pinnacle of tennis, despite what people want to say. Then you have Flavio. Then you have Luciano. And then you have Berrettini. Sorry, I forgot to mention Berrettini. My apologies to him. Then you have Cina. And now you have a 17-year-old. Like, we can keep going down the list of Italians through this, but you just threw out a name. Personally, I have not recognized ever. And you're telling me that he's better than this giant kid? Like, it really puts you into perspective. And when did you first come onto the scene for Jakobo?
He was a top 10 junior, but because he didn't do much at the slams, I actually wasn't too aware of him up until the recent wildcards in Italy in Challengers. My like knowledge about the juniors is mostly watching the slams. Like I'm not gonna be seeing, you know, the
That's
other like
fine.
J1 big events or something
Oh,
like
that's
that.
fair.
Maybe Orange Ball and stuff like that. But
Yeah,
yeah,
Kalamazoo,
generally
stuff like
mostly the
that.
slams. Yeah. So basically, because Vasami didn't really do much at the slams, that's why I wasn't really aware of him. But you know, top 10 junior in the rankings, so it's not like he's been doing poorly there. And yeah, it was like a streak of recent Challenger wildcards in Italy. Obviously, in Italy, he's like choices for wildcards or you know the events that can choose him. They are going to be mostly clay. So see when we see him, you know, on the Challenger Tour for the first time on hard courts. Maybe there's like Olbia in October, for example. So there are some Italian events, but I don't think they're yeah, they're not really going to be coming anytime soon. But yeah, what you said as well, like guys like, I don't know, Alcaraz, Sinner and the likes, like they feel old when you watch the
It's
Challenger Tour.
crazy. It's crazy to me. Like, we have kids that let's talk about this kid, the German that beat
Yeah, Diego
Shapovalov.
de Dura.
Should we talk about the celebration, or should we just like leave it alone? Like, for me, like, did you see the celebration, first of all?
Yes. Personally, I'm fine with it. As in, like, okay, when an opponent is retiring, obviously you shouldn't redo it unless it's a really massive, monumental win. In this case, it was. I mean, the first 2008 born player to even play on the ATP tour, also to win a match. I do think, you know, considering that even this year, like, he hasn't been doing too well on the pro circuit. Like, obviously, he's amazing for his age, and still the game is pretty limited. Like, I think in many ways you can kind of compare him to Lerner Tien with how, like, they're super strong, you know, counter punching and making it unpleasant for the opponent. But then when you have to create, it gets a bit more tricky. So obviously Lerner is way ahead of Diego for now, but like, yeah, I mean, for the situation that he was in, I think that it's okay. But I also understand that it rubs some people the wrong way, and some of the symbolics there was even a little weird. But cool, I mean, it's a personality, right? We need
It is.
personality.
I think for me it was, I get it. Like, there's two sides to every coin, and I've asked people about this, and some players have responded to me. It's some people have said it's completely out of place. Some people said it's like, yeah, he won, that's fine. But I think it's just circumstantial. Like, you can't, personally, great. You can sell, I would celebrate this off the court more like he did, but to do it on court in front of people like that, and to draw something in the clay, to like fall down like you won the tournament, like, it's great, but to each its own. Some people can just see it as disrespectful. So it's, I personally, good for you, but maybe not the right look. So it's all about perspective in that sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I can see both sides to this argument. I personally, as I said, I'm fine just letting it go this one time. Obviously, if, I don't know, whoever else was in that event, Miomir Kecmanovic beats Denis Shapovalov in the same way, he doesn't do it, right? But because it was his first, and also, you know, at home, sort of, yeah, I mean, I get it. It was a reaction, sure. Would I be a little angry if my opponent did that? Maybe.
I get it.
You just mentioned though that like these are very young kids we're talking about, right? So
It's
I wouldn't want to be like, you know, just let's say I wouldn't want someone to bring up my mistakes from when I was 17.
That's
So
true. That's true. I will give you that. But if we were to look at more Europeans in that kind of sphere, a 20-year-old that's kind of been on the Challenger Tour a lot, Belgian Alexander. And please correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Block or Blocks?
I think you pronounce the X, yeah.
You pronounce the X, so it's Blocks. He's been on the Challenger Tour and having a lot of success, and maybe more last year than this year, but what can you tell us about him? Because he's been a name that I feel like has been very recognizable now in draws when he makes a main draw of a 250.
Has he? I mean, other than Antwerp, though? Oh, I guess Miami also. Another 250, but an ATP to main draw. I guess maybe these are his only ones. But yeah, I mean, still waiting for, let's say, the explosion, but he's won a couple of Challenger 100s indoors. I think clearly the best conditions for his game. When I asked him about it, he actually said that he like kind of like likes the control of his game, you know, more in such circumstances, which is, you know, obvious that it's like perfect and you don't have to worry about any other stuff. I think this is also an example of a game where like the guy is so talented, but there are still some like major weaknesses to cover, like the return where he could develop a better blocks return. Yes, sorry, I had to throw in at least one of them there. There are so many puns regarding his surname, which maybe is also why it's so recognizable, right? Because it's just so easy to
I can't wait to hear another one.
remember. I'm gonna try not to, but maybe it will just come to be.
That's fair.
Anyway, yeah, also the backhand as a whole, like when someone just like pushes him into a long backhand exchange, yeah, he might not look the best. So I think there's still a lot to fix, but obviously that's a guy on the rise. I know that he was very excited to play the clay swing because last year he was injured around this time of the year. He went to Asia and he just like got injured in his first match there or something like that. He was out for 3 months and now he feels like he has like developed a lot physically and that should be much better. Except he just hasn't gotten the best draws in the last two events because I think he played Safiulin and Cioric. So right away, the
And
opening
George
rounds.
had
But
and George, speaking of George, like he had an unbelievable challenger. He won what, back-to-back challenger tour titles, and he's getting back out
he won three of them in a row,
three of
actually.
them, similar to Nava, but not the same kind of. We just kind of expect that from Borna, don't we? In that way.
Sort of. Then again, has it been happening for him? Not really. Like even when he was playing the Challenger Tour last year at the end of the season, indoors as well. Yeah, just wasn't doing too hot at all. So it was a difference. Like it was something new. He took a month off. I'm not sure if it was anything physical or something like that, but he comes back and he's just like completely in a different, zone, locked
Love
in.
that.
I think even in 22, and he won Cincinnati, of course, that was still like his one good week for the year, right? Maybe also with the Parma Challenger in June. So I mean, in a way, it was something new. But yeah, I mean, obviously that's a guy who's been in the top 20, and at some point we just expected him to stay there forever. So maybe it's not quite as like, noteworthy that he's won three challengers in a row, but still, that's something he's never done. And also he switched surfaces along the way, which I guess makes it a little more impressive as well. Of course, it was 3 in 4 weeks, not in 3 weeks, but I guess that was the same case for Nava.
And for George too, like he always had his injury spells as well, and I think that's what really pushed him back mentally to kind of get back into a regular routine of playing his best tennis. And you can see that, and I think maybe it's just the way that they are both seen, like Emilio Nava finding his way to his potential versus George finding his way back to what we can see him be doing on a consistent basis. Because besides the challenger level, I feel like George has still so much to offer without possibly getting hurt again, which is the hardest part that you can do at, I can't even say like his age, because he's not even that old, right?
I
Like
don't know, 28 maybe, 27, I
he's
don't
a
know.
year younger than me, and I'm saying that. Like, that's what's crazy. So when you see these guys playing the Challenger Tour, it's not like they're trying to find their career again. They're just trying to find their mojo to get back to where they once were.
Sort of, yeah, and I guess that's the whole point of it. I mean, the Challenger Tour is not only for the youngsters, right? It's kind of like a mixture of these young upcoming players who of course are kind of like what you watch for the most part. Like you want to see the future stars, but at the same time it doesn't work without all these returning greats and without all the guys who spend their entire career at the challenger level too. But I guess mostly when you're watching, you're either like, yeah, for the old guys who have so much quality, and at the same time also the young stars who are just up and coming and eventually probably will progress to achieve greater things. And then yeah, certainly that's kind of like the two biggest storylines usually,
It really
and these
is.
examples fitted very well. Yeah,
So what if we were to talk about more young guys, well, younger guys, I mean, he's still old compared to some of the names we've already mentioned. Elmer Müller, Danish kid, 21 years old, top 120 right now. Is he in the top 100?
more or less. I mean, after last week, he might be entering that somewhere around that.
He is close, I
I
want to
think he
say.
might be, especially live right now because he qualified for Madrid. I think live he definitely will be to a top 120.
Okay. I'm trying to find it here and I still can't find him. Yeah, he's 111. His career high
Okay.
was 114 before that, and he
So
won.
that's from Monday. Like
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
literally
It's
from Monday.
literally.
Yeah.
So, what can you tell us about him? Because he's another guy that I felt like, 21 years old, has been really good in terms of showing his form as of late. So what do we need to know about him especially being from Denmark and kind of being the number two guy for his country behind Holger Rune.
Yeah, so the funny thing is, I mean, I obviously didn't do any prep for this episode, but I was just like thinking, so who are we probably going to talk about? And Nava was the first guy that came to mind. Yep. The second was Miller. And
really?
Even if you
I love that.
Say anything about it, I definitely would have.
Okay.
It also is very fitting because, of course, we're recording this on Wednesday, mm-hmm. and tomorrow he's going to play against Joao Fonseca in Madrid. So definitely has been like the story of the last week and a half,
yeah.
winning Guayras and qualifying as well with a pretty difficult draw of Basavaredi, whom we mentioned, and Mike Schack.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, everything you need to know really about Elmer Miller is that he has the best backhand on tour. And I'm not
what?
Talking about the Challenger tour. Like, this shot is ridiculous.
Wow.
Obviously, you know, that's a big call. Like, sure, Alexander's
no,
very
I like the big call. We have to stay with it. Stay with the narrative. I want you to believe
I'm not
in this
very
statement.
Serious about it, okay?
Damn it. Very
serious about it.
I
but
wanted
it is
you to
very
be.
High. It is
okay.
Like absolutely elite. You don't have to put any asterisks to it. And obviously, you know, there are some similarities. There are some, let's say, there are some frailties as well. The serve, the forehand. On hard courts, I mean, so far he's been a little non-existent, let's say. He actually defeated Medjedovic in a deciding rubber this year at Davis Cup, but after that he like goes to India, loses everything, and I was a little scared, you know. I was a little worried, is Elmer really gonna make the progress that I thought he might this year?
Yeah.
And then he shows up on clay. Okay, first event wasn't amazing, but after that it's just like a revelation, you know. You see suddenly, because he feels more comfortable, you see all the creativity come out as well, and basically you just see that, you know, he's in his element, he's in his zone. He's been amazing ever since. 10 games in a row against Comesaña in the Oeiras final on Sunday, for example. Yesterday, another amazing match. And like, how does Elmer Miller win 10 games in a row, by the way? Yeah, it's by blasting like backhand winners left and right.
I love
the
that.
weight of shot he has from that wing is just really almost unmatched. Obviously, we don't have many like primarily backhand oriented players in general. Like, I don't know, Aslan Karatsev, Richard Gasquet, Benoit Paire. But like, okay, these are guys who aren't exactly the youngest. So I think it is pretty rare. It would be amazing to have this sort of game profile on the tour. And even though for now he hasn't shown anything outside of clay courts, I think it's pretty obvious that you can get to the top 100 just by playing on clay. A lot of players have done that. I mean, Navone, I think, was seeded for a slam last year without even ever... Actually, I think he earned 1 point or something like that on hard courts ever in his career, but definitely didn't have one on his ranking. So it is very, very possible. And Elmer is probably about to do that. And I think, someone who's like this unique in terms of his game would definitely be an amazing addition. A lot of players are struggling with that as well, to kind of like, you know, try to figure out that you have to play this guy differently than 95% of your opponents. I've seen that, I don't know, even someone like as intelligent, as experienced, like Ramos Vinolas failed that last. Like, he was just playing into exactly what Elmer wanted, trying to throw in these, you know, loopy forehands, cross court at his backhand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? I mean, how on earth are you doing this? And I mean, it takes a while. And obviously, I kind of hate this draw that he's playing Fonseca in Madrid because it might be too tough, but at the same time,
it's going
to
be
fantastic
a fun
to
one.
Get this clash. Yeah.
Well, people that, like, for us, like, we know what the potential is of this match. Like, we know that these top two talents, but people are going to only know João for what he's done so far. But it's also one of those where you have to look at it and go, okay, let's see if he has the capability to kind of play to that next gen level that all these other guys may be at, right? And it's hard to kind of deviate from that narrative when all you can think about is the Brazilian that's already had kind of success in that factor, right? And you made me excited to watch him. Like, I've been seeing a lot of people talk about him, and I've been seeing Carl Emil Overbeck, who's playing for Cal. We had him on the channel and the podcast, and we talked to him, and he's been a great guy. He reached top five in the nation for D1 tennis, but like, seeing him show his support for Emil, I want to see that more in from other people as well. Like, I want to see how well this kid can kind of reach up in the rankings. And I apologize if you hear a bone rattling around, my dog's flipping it under my chair. So if we were to talk about some of these bigger challenger events, like, now we have challenger 175s, which is basically just a smaller, it is a smaller 250. That's what it represents. It's half of a 250. But the names that they get for some of these 175s, it's so insane. These are 250 events. It's just a challenger.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. There's almost no difference. The thing is that, like, for regular challenger events, so 1 to 5 and below, players ranked between 11 and 50, they cannot sign up. They can only get there with an ATP, like, pre-approved wildcard, and it's only for the higher categories as well. I think maybe 100 and above. So it's not. So obviously, like, usually we only get, I don't know, 10 a year maybe or something like that. Whereas for the 175s, they can sign up, and these are weeks where there's not much else to do, right? I mean, you play Indian Wells, you lose early, and you have a few choices. I mean, you can just spend a week doing, well, practicing and doing nothing. But, like, some players just want to keep going and want to grab more match rhythm, more momentum. And then you have, Phoenix or Capcana. I don't know. Jakub Mensch makes a semi in Capcana and then wins at Miami, right? And it's the same with the second weeks of Madrid and Rome, obviously. So yeah, ever since these were introduced, I think they definitely have kind of, like, changed also how maybe some of the general public looks at the Challenger Tour, because these are obviously events that get a lot more hype around them. And Fonseca winning Phoenix was such a big story as well. So yeah, I'm so excited as well for the ones coming up: Aix-en-Provence, Estoril, and then the second week of Rome. Of course, there's going to be Turin and Bordeaux. In fact, I'm going to be leaving for Estoril on Monday.
Are
So
you really?
yeah.
Did you get a credential?
Yeah.
Look at you. How long are you going to be there the whole week?
I'm going to be there from the second day, so from the first day of the main draw, so from Tuesday to Sunday.
Nice.
It's my second Challenger 175. I've been to Cagliari as well in 2023. Was a pretty good experience, although I have to say it was a little bit more main tourish in terms of, let's say, the media access and everything. I'm not saying that's bad. It didn't really have the vibe that I usually
Of
travel
a
to challengers
challenger.
for.
Yeah. You can
But
definitely tell.
Estoril, I've been to last year as well for the 250, so I knew that I wanted to come again. And I know that for some Portuguese people and for fans of that event, it's going to be a downgrade that it's a Challenger 175 only for this year. For me, as a Challenger fanboy, that's an upgrade. Like, that's when I know that I absolutely have to go again.
Yeah. And just kind of compare the two vibes. And it was sad too to kind of see that tournament be downgraded. Like, it's great that it's now a challenger, but it's a little disappointing that it kind of went
Yeah, but it's
down
just for
to.
1 year. It's just for 1 year. It's going to be back to a 250 in 2026. They just couldn't really fit it into the calendar. Bucharest was also let's say that event was a player in that conversation that they kind of couldn't, like, manage, because even though the event in Bucharest also didn't want the date at the end of March or, like, at the beginning of April that it got this year, again, no space to fit it. Of course, there's been some changes structurally as well, with the Hamburg 500 moving just before Roland Garros, unprecedented on the ATP side to have a 500 just before the Slam, and also Barcelona Munich being two 500s, and they don't want to have weeks where, like, it's two 500s and a 250. So yeah, just a lot of mess with that. But I don't think the event will be that disappointed in general. Like, I actually expect the, let's say, the organization to be very similar. I think the crowds should be there too. And after all, it's just for 1 year. Like, they might not get Casper Ruud and Hubert Hurkacz again, but they are still getting a very strong top 100 lineup. Actually, I think maybe Hurkacz could be gettable if he loses early in Madrid. I think they should be talking to him at least about it. But of
To get
course, we'll
them.
see. That's always the thing also of these 175s, that we can't be too, like, when we see
Hopeful.
the entry list, yeah, when we see the entry list, we have to remember that it's basically not even worth looking at, because half of these names aren't actually going to make it there. Like, they're just signing up and
Just in
they're
case. It's like a
Dalton,
ba it's
yeah.
a back it's a backup, which is hard to imagine. I feel like some tennis fans don't know that in terms of like, yeah, we have the possibility of seeing all these people, but then if they do well, they're not going to want to turn around within 24, literally 12 hours to pack up, move, and then go to another tournament after they just won one and they don't need to play another one, which is disappointing, but it's the reality of the sport that we love so much.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, sometimes when I travel to an event, I'm like, you know, the last 2 or 3 days before the tournament begins, it's just like, you know, checking every single tweet from, you know, entry list updates or whatever, and just seeing, oh no, this guy pulled out. This guy pulled out.
Just
And then,
watching your phone so aggressively to figure out if you can see if someone's done it. It's a
yeah,
it's
I mean, that's a little unfortunate, but it's just how it works indeed. I mean, in this case, of course, the 175s are probably the events that are like the most hampered, because in order not to be able to appear in Estoril or Aix-en-Provence, you don't have to win Madrid. You just have to get to like the third or fourth round, really. So there's the pool of players that is going to withdraw is obviously much bigger.
Exactly. And Damien, I can't thank you enough for talking to us about challengers and players that we need to watch. Is there any names that we may have not mentioned or ones? I know you, Elmer was a name that you wanted to point out, Emilio as well. Is there any others that we need to? Jacobo was a great shout, by the way. I'm very excited to learn more about him. Is there any other names that we need to be on the lookout for or ones that stand out to you in the next couple months or for the rest of the year?
I'm trying to think now. I mean, obviously Van den Rooyen just had an amazing streak as well, kind of similar to Chorich. They had this amazing showdown in the Zadar final where both of them were on a 14 match winning streak. I do wonder how it's going to progress from here though. Like, he's actually just had a, well, his first, let's say, bad loss in a while in the Oeiras second round to Bertola. He also lost to Kopshiva in the Madrid qualifying. So I do kind of wonder how it's going to be, but like if we're talking about the best players of the Challenger circuit this year so far, absolutely has to be included the two back-to-back challengers in Rwanda. That was quite special. Of course, unique conditions, but he was by far the best player there. I maybe should have prepared for that a little,
No,
just
that's on
so that
me.
something, you know, pops into
That
my mind
and you can
quicker.
blame and you can blame me for that, and I do apologize for not giving you some prompt before this, but
That's okay. That's okay. I mean, there's definitely been guys that already have shined on the ATP tour, right? Like, I don't know, Kopshiva broke the top 100 in Marrakesh after winning Naples, and he's also qualified for Madrid, so a good chance to watch him very soon, of course. Collignon, I think, maybe a guy who's hasn't had like a big ATP tour moment yet, but the consistency with which he's like killing every single challenger tournament he's competing in is amazing, and he's just such a like a brutal, efficient beast that I think on the Challenger Tour it just works so well. And I have my questions, like whether, you know, whether it's going to be the same when the level goes higher. But that's a storyline for us to watch in the coming weeks for sure.
100%. And in terms, like, we could also talk about Cognon, Raphael from another Belgian, Landa Luce, which I'm very curious to find out more about him, the Spaniard who's young but hasn't really gotten us there yet. Even
Yeah, the last 3 months, I mean, what a
not great.
nightmare he's having. I don't really understand how it happened, because last year, okay, like he wasn't progressing like Fonseca, right? But he was just very gradually improving. There was an amazing November match between them, 7-6 in the third for João, and everything seemed to be going right. And even this year, he begins with a semi in Canberra, losing to Ethan Quinn, whom you already mentioned. Australian Open qualifying, he plays two great matches in a very difficult section. I think it was like Trotter and Collignon. Yeah, Collignon in the first 2 rounds. And after that, I don't know, just completely went off. I guess, you know, progress isn't linear, as we always say, right? It's everybody has their own route.
Yes, I agree. Actually, one more. I'm gonna give you one more. Valentin Royer.
I just mentioned him like
Yeah.
2 minutes ago.
Okay, that's okay. That was the name you mentioned.
Yeah,
I couldn't
when I
hear.
was talking about the Chorich match, the 14 wins that they were both on, winner of the Kigali double. Yeah.
So
I mean,
I'm gonna go leave so that way I don't mess up again. I'm sorry.
don't worry, there's no worry.
just jump out the window here. But yes, I think all these guys have so much. There's so many guys right now on the challenger level that are right there. And I'm still trying to figure out like who there's so many to watch. I don't know how you like I don't know if you have an alert every time someone plays and your phone's just always buzzing off a table, or you have four screens on all the time.
Well, probably not alerts. In terms of screens, I'm trying not to do more than two because I basically realized that when I watch four matches at the same time, it's not actually like I'm watching that. Like, okay, I see the players, I see the scoreboards,
It's in the back.
but it's kind of impossible at this point to just be focused and actually realize what's going on. But yeah, obviously, it takes a lot of time. Like, even this week is a great example. We have five challenger events, five on five continents. So it's like tennis is on 24/7. There's always something you're going to miss. Obviously, you're not going to be able to watch all of that. I try to watch every single final, which I'm pretty much successful at. But otherwise, you have to pick and choose. I mean, it's absolutely impossible to be able to keep up with everything when there are over 200 events every single season. So yeah, there's definitely something that I miss. I think I noticed that, especially as the number of challengers went up, Europe and the US tends to be what I watch the most. Different reasons, like, I don't know, convenience in terms of the time zones, the
That's
entry
fair.
lists probably are the most exciting for me. But that's why I love that, there are also other fans who can maybe bring me up to speed a little on the South American events that I've been watching a little less. These past 2 weeks, I think the events in Asia have been amazing. So I've been waking up a little bit earlier to catch some of that.
He's
And
everywhere.
it's a fun existence for sure for a Challenger fan right now because, yeah, it's like 24/7.
I love that.
The downside is that you're going to miss some, even if you're always going to miss something, even if you don't want to. But obviously, the upside is that, like, anytime it's impossible to be bored as a Challenger fan.
I love that. I think that's the tagline right there. It's impossible. I'm writing this down too. It's impossible to be bored. I mean, Damien, I can't thank you enough for coming on the channel and the podcast to talk about challengers. Where should people follow you if this is the first time they are seeing you, hearing you, following you? Where should they follow for your primary content?
Probably Twitter is actually like the best option to follow me, and then you'll find anything else there. My Twitter handle is just my name and surname, which you're gonna find in the title or the description of this video.
Thank you, Damien.
So yeah, I mean, feel invited for that, and yeah, other than that, I obviously do a lot of other work, but if you follow my Twitter, you're probably gonna be able to get to that as well.
I
And
love
yeah, like it's a bit of a life mission to make more people watch challengers.
I love that.
So if you're going to be one of them, the viewer that I'm talking to, that's amazing.
I love that. Damien, thank you so much for joining us. If you are not following Damien, please make sure you do. If you're watching this, it's in the description below. If you're listening to this, it's in the bio of this podcast. But Damien, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you're subscribed to Tweener Head Tennis on YouTube. Make sure you're following the podcast. Your ball is out. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you guys so much for watching and listening.